Yes, it is Coast to Coast. I'm David Rubin. My guest tonight, John Lear. So many conspiracies. I'm having a hard time with handling all of this. Everything is a conspiracy. But of course, it's possible, which is why it's constantly being thrown about like a baseball. The idea that there are ETs in control of our lives. Well, I'm waiting to see one. I want to see an ET. Although, I'm not very friendly about that kind of experience. Could go very bad for me. It could go very bad for the ET. Or maybe I'm fantasizing. Maybe it's all, everything is a figment of our imagination. And maybe none of it is. How do we get to the bottom of that? We're talking with John Lear, and I really want to get to the topic of genetic engineering. John has some information about super soldiers. I read an article some years ago about how one day we would be able to splice the muscle DNA from a gorilla into a human being. Now, I just read the other day that, in fact, we are going to be making designer babies. Two women and one man making one baby, taking the best parts, leaving the rest behind. Is that the brave new world we're going to? We'll talk more about that with John Lear when we come back. This is Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm David Rubin, and we're talking with John Lear tonight. Many conspiracies. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around them, to be honest with you, John. I do want to ask you, though, about super soldiers. This is a very important topic because this week we saw an article in the headlines. They're going to be doing designer babies now. What do you know? And I've heard you talk about this before, about things that have been going on for many years. Let's open up that topic right now.
Yeah, well, 30 years ago, David, a friend of mine, Cecil McMains, used to work up at Area 51. He worked on the SR-71. He went to work in the middle 70s to work for Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden was Osama's half-brother, and I knew him real well. He was one of the one of the investors in the Learfin Corporation, along with the other sheikh. I'm trying to remember his name. Anyway, Salam's family was the largest builder in Saudi Arabia, and Cecil went as his right-hand man and co-pilot. Salam had a Lear 25, and Salam would work for about 10 weeks on and 3 weeks off. And we live close to each other here in Las Vegas. And in 1983, he came over to my house and we're talking. And he said, "What do you know about clones?" And I said, "Nothing." He said, "It's all true." He said, "If you could be a mouse in my pocket, you would see things that are just unbelievable." And that's when I started to learn about clones, super soldiers. Now, Salam was a pretty good guy. I worked in Egypt flying for Air Sinai. And what happened was in 1978, there was the Camp David Accords provided for each country, Israel and Egypt, to make four flights into each other's country four times a week. Well, the Israelis didn't mind flying to Egypt, but you could not find an Egyptian that would fly into Israel. So a company was formed, Air Sinai, and I was chief pilot, and we were pretending to be Egyptians flying the required four flights a week into Israel. And Salam had a home in Egypt at that time, and he had a ultralight, which he used to fly around all the time. As a matter of fact, he was killed about 20 years ago in an ultralight in Houston. He was flying it at just at sunset and hit a power line. But anyway, at one of these interesting deals, on one of these flights, I became the only pilot to have flown for Egypt Air or Air Sinai and LL on the same day in the same aircraft. And that was pretty interesting. It was a flight over to Istanbul, and I forget what the deal was, but apparently LL had a very important flight, and there was a strike on, and they were not flying, so they had to lease our airplane, and that's how I got into that.
Did you ever ferry any of these super soldiers? Did you have contact with any of them?
No. I didn't know about come off the silver shoulders until a couple of years ago. They had a conference here down, I think it was in Phoenix, about a year ago, I think. But there's another one coming up in 2 months here in Vegas, and I've been invited. And I think there's about 15 or 20 of them that show up and tell their stories. And it's really interesting. I mean, it's just unbelievable what whoever's doing the modification has been able to do. What they cannot do is transfer the soul or make a soul. ETs are the only ones that can do that. And the soul is an unbelievable thing that ETs make. And ET conceived us, designed us, engineered us, planted us, grew us, nurtured us, updated our software as necessary, and transferred us sometimes back to Earth. And if we learned how to live with integrity without envy, hate, or greed, and to express our love to our families each and every day, transfer us to higher dimensions. ET has total and complete control of everything we do, see, hear, think, touch. And even though we think we have free will and freedom of speech, we don't. The purpose of mankind is to learn how to live with integrity. And when we learn how to do that without a cheat sheet or prompt, we ascend to the fourth dimension. And the ultimate purpose is to learn how to navigate our soul, given to us at birth. Now, you said you would like to meet an ET. You've met ET many, many times in previous lifetimes, but you're not allowed to remember it because it would be very, very scary. And so that's why you don't get to do that.
Well, John, also, let me ask you this question. Let me back up for a minute. I'm reading a book. It's called Murderous Minds, and it's about how to identify a psychopath. So I'm asking now, what happens to people? What inhabits them when they turn to such darkness? Does the ET explain that?
Yeah, they keep coming back here until they learn how to not turn towards darkness. And in very, very few cases, they have to be shredded. But that doesn't happen very often. You have to be.
Tell me about that. I mean, how does that happen? Or is their soul extracted and sent into a place of exile?
A shredder. It's not exile. It's a shredder.
So it just destroys it completely.
Yeah.
Hmm. See, it seems that we have a growing body of psychopaths in this world. And I'm wondering, is it the culture that's creating them? Because 50 years ago, you know, mass murderers were almost unheard of. Now, of course, we didn't have the kind of news media that we have today. But is there a proliferation, a growing body of people who just haven't learned their lesson? Is that what we're seeing?
In the sense of, I think it's the same amount there was. I really don't know.
Okay. Let me ask you about ET then.
Okay, I get to talk?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Go ahead, ask that, and then I want to get on with my secrets or I'll never get them all out.
Okay. I'm just curious because I'm trying to understand the bigger picture. Continue with your secrets. We'll pick this up in the next hour.
Okay. TWA 800 affected me because I actually lost a job because my company went bankrupt with the scam that this was. Now, the Navy accidentally shot down TWA 800, and it was an accident. And I think it was the fifth airplane that that the Navy had shot down in their history, fifth civilian airplane, the first one being Flying Tiger Line in 1963, and I worked for Flying Tiger Lions at that time. But they were so intent on covering this one up that they said it was the a fuel tank had an exposed wire, a fuel pump in the center tank. There's no such thing. Fuel pumps are completely enclosed. There's no possibility that there could be ever a loose wire or anything to create a fire or spark or explosion in the center fuel tank. And at that time, of TWA-800, I was flying from Wichita to Seattle with cargo airplanes, flying the 777 Cowling. We had airplane, the L-1011, that was so big, it was the only airplane that could carry the Cowlings. And those Boeing guys in Wichita were really complaining about this fuel pump thing because there's no possibility that it could have caused a fire. Well, anyway, what the FAA did is they said they had to reduce the fuel in the center fuel tank so that it was low enough that no fire could happen. And what that caused is they made it not for only the 747, they made it for all airplanes. And the payload for the L-1011 was so close that, you know, we were just barely making money carrying the cargo we did. But then when they took away that 1,000 or 1,500 extra pounds, that was it. I mean, it was all over. So they did a lot of things that absolutely were not necessary. Same thing with United Airlines 585, Boeing 737 in Colorado Springs, and U.S. Air 427, Boeing 737 in Pittsburgh. They claimed that they were yaw damper problems. They claimed that the yaw damper caused a hard over. A hard over is when it applies full left rudder or full right rudder. This is bogus because any of those inputs can be overridden with 80 pounds of pressure, which is nothing for an adult male to press on his foot and get 80 pounds. But what the real cause of those accidents were suicides. In the case of the United Airlines 585, Boeing 737 in Colorado Springs, it was a captain, and his first officer was his girlfriend. And his girlfriend had caught him with another girl the night before. And so when they showed up for this flight, they argued all the way down to Colorado Springs. And when they got on final, the captain said, well, if I can't have you, nobody's going to have you, and just did a split S into the ground. Now, as hard as that is to believe, I got that from the investigators. But, of course, NTSB is not going to come out and say that. They can't. Same thing with the U.S. Air 427, Boeing 737 in Pittsburgh. I don't know what the pilot's problem was, but he did the same thing, just rolled it over, split it into the ground, and the NTSB claimed it was a rudder yaw damper hard over, which it was not. Now, Silk Air 185, Boeing 737 in Malaysia, when they investigated that accident, yes, that was also a pilot suicide, but that was also the official admitted cause. They didn't go as far.
I remember
far
that.
As to,
yeah.
They didn't go as far as to blame it on anybody else. American Airlines 1524 LaGuardia, that has been claimed that it was the rudder snapping off of this Airbus, and there was a whole big to do about that, and that was all baloney. It was a bomb in the aft cargo, and there's pictures of it from the various cameras they had around the area, shows it going off. But we could not admit it because I think the president, I forget who was president at the time, he had just said, we will tolerate, and this was just after 9/11, said we will not tolerate any more acts of this type against Americans. And here they go with a one right after, and they couldn't admit it, so they had to blame it on the tail snapping off. I don't know what they gave France in return for not making a big to-do about it, but they had to give them something. I don't know what it was. As far as Air France 447, you remember that was one that crashed in the middle of the Atlantic And they claim it was the pilot who didn't know how to recover from a stall. Well, this is really nonsense. I mean, here's a pilot who's already dead, you know, and you're going to blame that he doesn't know the basic things about airplanes. And everybody jumped on this like it was real. Well, I saw film from Brazil when they were taking in the wreckage, and those people were, all the passengers were in the brace position, which means they knew a crash was coming. So the pilot had time to tell them to brace as he was trying to get the airplane down. And what the real cause of it was a pitot tube that was not getting heated, and it showed a false airspeed indication. And he was trying to get control of the airplane and just couldn't do it. But it wasn't because he didn't know how to recover from a stall.
I imagine things like that happen also in the Bermuda Triangle. Those kinds of things that never are understood or known.
Probably. Yep. And then the Thresher and the Scorpion were two American nuclear submarines that were lost under the California plate. The 11 western states of the United States sit on a plate, and this plate is over the Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean runs under those 11 states. So the Navy found out how to get into that plate, and it's at Moss Landing near Fort Ord in the Monterey Bay. There's a big a cave there, and as a matter of fact, you can go to Google Earth and go to Moss Landing, and you can see the canyon that leads into the underpart of California. And the Navy takes their submarines and they can go there. And for years, you know, I was used to travel back and forth between Las Vegas and Reno, and halfway between is a little town called Hawthorne. And there's a little lake there about 15 miles long called Walker Lake. And there's a big sign as you go into town, and it says Naval Undersea Warfare Center. And I always wondered, now, how could the Navy have a warfare center in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the Nevada desert? And people would tell me every once in a while, if either I was sitting in the cockpit with somebody who knew, or somebody would say, yeah, there's a submarine base down there. And I found out what it was. What it was there's an elevator that they built that goes down the 3,400 feet from the floor of the desert down to the Pacific Ocean. And the reason they built it there is because the main munition manufacturer for submarine munitions is right across the street at the old Army Depot. And this worked out perfect for them because they don't have to send these high explosive materials north to San Francisco or south to Los Angeles or San Diego. They can just drive across the street, put it in the elevator, go down 3,400 feet, and load it on the submarines. And there's a big submarine base under Hawthorne, 3,400 feet down. It's a big submarine pen.
Amazing. Amazing.
The Ballard, who allegedly found the Titanic, what is not known by the public is the Navy was there 3 years before the public was told that they discovered Titanic. The whole thing you saw on TV about them discovering it and the first time they're there, the Navy had been there 3 years before. And Ballard's deal with the Navy, or the Navy's deal with Ballard, was that if he would explore the Azores and take film of where one of the I think it was the Scorpion was lost, that they would give him the ship to find the Titanic and tell him where it was. Now, the plutonium you've already covered. Tunguska you've already covered. Siegfried and Roy, here's one that's not generally known by the public.
Okay.
Roy died of cancer years ago, and I don't remember when it was, but they were so successful and they were making so much money for Steve Woman that they couldn't let the show stop. So they got Roy's second cousin and did a facelift on him and gave him a quickie 4 to 6 week handling of the tigers. and put him on the show with Siegfried, so that there was no so there's no break in the show. And that's what happened, and that's why the Tigers eventually bit Roy, because he wasn't that familiar with him. It wasn't really Roy at all. Roy had died of cancer years before that.
Good heavens. Hold on. Hold that thought. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more with John Lear. Conspiracies. And there's no end to it. But at some point there is. Maybe you want to chime in on this. I'm David Rubin, and this is Coast to Coast. Yes, it is, and we're with John Lear tonight. So many things that are so startling, and I guess I'm going to reach out to you right now, John. I need your help. I need you to help me. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed by everything that you're laying out with me tonight. It's making me feel like there's nothing I can do. I used to feel at one point in my life that I could make a difference in the world by talking about the things that we're talking about, but there's so much of it. Help me find my compass right now. Help me find north. Help me find a way to cope with this information, because I'm not coping with it very well, I have to admit. Give me some advice. How did you start to cope with all this as you saw it, as it was all being revealed to you?
Okay, first you got to understand is you're not here to change the world. You're here for the world to change you. And, you know, I've said it many times, it's living with integrity and without envy and greed. How did I deal with it? When it first was, and this would have been 1986, this is when I was getting into UFOs, and when it became absolutely true that aliens were here and they were real, I went to my family went to visit my wife's family in Philadelphia, Mississippi, and I remember walking out on the street, a little small street there in a little small town, and it was just dusk, and I remember looking up at the sky and just screaming, just
really?
Yelling to get it out.
Wow.
And that didn't last for too long, but and I don't remember how long it lasted, but that's what happened to me when I first realized that, yes, it's all true, they're here.
Okay, now this is a perfect place for us to take a quick break, because when we come back, I want to hear about your first UFO experience. This is Coast to Coast. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I'm David Rubin. My guest tonight is John Lear, and this is Coast to Coast. John, I'm really sincerely reaching out to you because I have to get an insight from you. I have a feeling that one day I will have that ET encounter that I kind of fear to have. You've said I shouldn't be afraid of it. I think subconsciously, maybe you're right. Maybe I've had one of those experiences and I just am not able to remember it. But I want you to tell me, please, what happened in your first experience so that I can get a sense of this?
Well, I don't remember any of mine, but I do remember when I first saw a UFO, and I didn't realize what it was until about 20 years later. But in 1966, I was descending into Palm Springs descending into Los Angeles in a Learjet. I was over Palm Springs, and I saw this white object that looked like, remember the $6 million man, the airplane
yeah,
crashed in?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what it looked like. And it came from left and below me to right and above me and ahead. And it was impressive. And when I got on the ground, I called the chief pilot of Learjet and said, hey, you'll never guess what I saw today. I saw the flying bathtub. And only years later did I realize how ridiculous it is that thing, if they were flying it, which they weren't, they wouldn't be flying it across the Los Angeles approach path.
Wow.
Then years later, in a 10-11, I saw, it was a night over Chicago, and I was looking to the south, and I saw this one light come across the sky and then go straight up. And I thought, oh, cool. And I watched another one come, and I said, cool. And then I never pointed out to anybody in the cockpit because none of them believe it anyway. And then the third one came, and I thought, geez, if there's more, I'd like these guys to see it. So I said, hey, guys, look and see if you see anything strange. And two more of them came across the sky and shot straight up. And so the only other one I saw, you know, was with Bob Lazar. He took us out on March 22nd. Incidentally, the 25th anniversary of that sighting is coming up, and I think George Knapp is going to do something. I'm not sure whether Bob Lazar is coming out or not, but he took us out to see the test flight. The Navy was test flying one of the ET flying saucers, and it was supposed to, he told us the day before it's going to be at 9 o'clock. So we got my old motor home, and I had my Celestron 8 telescope, and we drove out to the dirt road that's on the northeast part of Groom Lake. And we drove right to about where we thought the restricted area started, set up the telescope, and by God, right at 9 o'clock, it started up and started doing these gravity jumps. Gravity jumps are where it jumps from place to place without any time, without any, you know,
yes,
not a second or 2 seconds, just immediate.
Right.
And then it stopped, and it started to settle behind the mountains. And I got a good focus on my Celestron 8, and it was, you know, typical flying saucer, and it was radiating, or some kind of stuff was flowing off at a golden stuff. I don't know what it was, but I did get a good view, and that's the last one I saw.
I need to share something with you that just has surfaced in my mind. I lived in Hawaii when I was 12 years old on Oahu. We lived right on the beach. One evening, right as the sun had set, I was watching the ocean, and I saw a light maybe a mile out. And I thought it was a boat. But as I watched it, it would kind of appear and then disappear. Watch it for about a half an hour, and then suddenly an airliner was going into land in the Honolulu airport. And this thing came straight up out of the water. This light came straight up, got in the contrail of the jetliner, and then, boom, it was gone. And I think that's at the bottom of my subconscious, whatever you want to call it. Something happened when I was young, and I didn't understand it, and it's kind of followed me my whole life.
If you saw it, you were in it, and that's a fact.
What?
If you saw one, you were in it.
Okay. This is getting kind of chilling right now. Tell me more.
Okay, let me run through these, and then I guess next hour we're going to have some callers. But the Shuttle Challenger, we remember all that about forget the scientist at Los Alamos who said it was ice on the strata. What it was sabotage. There's four clamps that hold down the shuttle while the engines are being started and getting up to full thrust. The tower is backed away, and these four hold-down clamps are the only things that hold it up. And what happened is somebody sabotaged one of them so that it couldn't release, and that's what broke that strut, and that's what caused the hole and the subsequent accident.
Mm.
Now, cold fusion, we hear about cold fusion. We hear about fusion engines. Actually, we don't hear that much anymore, and the reason is they've solved it. They have fusion engines. They run carriers. They run sealed delivery vehicles. They're down to a manageable size. They're extremely efficient. And, you know, the aircraft carriers we're here, their top speed is about 45 knots. They can go 90 knots. And what they do is they be sure that everybody's below deck, so that they can't see their speed they're at, and then they power up, and they can really rotate along. The Hubble telescope, you asked about that before. There's at least two and probably three. What happened is they launched the one that the secret one, and then they launched the public one. And when they launched the public one, they used it to create a binocular effect. And it was so amazing, and they could see so much more, that they told the public that theirs was broken. And for 2 years, we waited for the astronauts to go up and bring it down, get it fixed. And, of course, the people that manufactured didn't care. They were getting paid for nothing. But that's what happened for the 2 years. The military was using it to create a binocular effect.
So John, I have to tell you, I'm feeling very emotional right now. And I don't want to bring you down here, but I have to understand what you just said to me. And I think other people want to know, too. If you saw it, you were in it?
Yeah.
Help me understand that. And I'm shaking right now.
They don't let anybody see a saucer unless there's a reason. And if you saw it, then you were in it.
Okay, let me just say this. I've seen a lot of them. I've seen a lot of them, and other people say that they don't see them. When I see them, is there something that's happened to me?
Yeah, they only want you to see it. That you can be in a crowd of people and be the only one to see it, and you're standing there saying, look, look, and everybody's saying, what, I don't see anything. You know, it's selective.
My God, this has happened to me for decades. This has happened to me for decades. Seriously. And you're the first one to ever explain it to me.
Yeah.
Go on, I'm listening. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to compose myself here. Go ahead.
Okay, talked about the moon before, and just to go by it again, the civilization on the moon is better than 500,000 people, just like us, but they are not from Earth. They're from someplace else. The moon was made on Jupiter about 38 billion years ago, and it's gone around. It's kind of a spaceship, and they tow it around, and it monitors what's going on Earth. That's where the Greys have their laboratories. And I have some pictures. I have 34 16 by 20 photos of the moon. And they were taken by the Lunar Orbiter series, which were launched between 1965 and 1967. And the importance of those photos is they were not as carefully airbrushed as the ones you see now, because in those days, they didn't realize how much was up on the moon and how much was there. And they didn't realize that in 40 years, people would have home computers that would be able to take those photos taken in 1965 and enlarge them to the point where they could see anything. And so I have some photos that are really great. There's one of Aristarchus that's obviously a some kind of nuclear generator. It's 23 miles in diameter. It's bright blue. And NASA's always told us that Aristarchus, they don't know why it's so bright. And if you get any picture of Aristarchus from NASA, it's always whited out.
John.
They just say, we don't know why it's so white. Well, they whited it out because you can clearly see it's up there. And so anybody that has a computer now, dial in Aristarchus or thelivingmoon.com, and you can see
John,
that. It's really,
John, my heart is racing. My heart is racing. Yeah, I need you to talk to me for a minute. My heart is racing. Okay. I'm having like a micro panic attack here.
Oh,
because
you're okay.
I'm not right now.
Dave,
I'm
everything's fine.
I'm trying to understand. Did they do something to me?
Well,
did they alter me?
Probably only to upgrade. If you were
upgrade, that sounds good. Because I've never fit in like other people, and I suppose you haven't either in that sense, but they allow you to see things that other people don't see.
Yeah.
I've never understood this before. I guess it's the basis of my curiosity. Would you say that?
Yeah. You're luckier than most. Some people say it's lucky. Some people don't want to have anything to do with it, but with your curiosity, it's pretty interesting.
So, I'm sorry.
I don't want you to go out and get a regression because you will regret it.
I don't want to. I don't want to get a regression. I like where I'm at. I'm just having to come to terms with it right now. It's been a whole lifetime that I never understood it. So
the people that get regressions have often regretted it, and they would pay anything to have not done it, because it's in some ways it can be scary.
Do you know anybody that's personally done that kind of thing? I wouldn't think of it, but
yeah. Has been frightened,
regressed, and then regretted it. Somebody that got rid of the experience and purged it.
The people that I know that have, what I will say is I have very close members of my family who have total recall of being abducted and going to the moon and lying on the silver table and being operated on. And they were young enough that it didn't bother them.
So a lot of this is attributed to like astral travel, when really it's not astral travel in that sense. It's an actual experience.
They can do either. They can take your body or they can just take your soul. Depends on what they're going to work on.
Wow. This is even getting deeper now. So implants. We've heard about people that have had implants. How do you know if you have one?
There's a little bump on your skin, or something that's odd about your skin. I don't know too much about that.
That's really interesting, because my son has one, and we took him to a doctor. The doctor can't explain it. 12 years old.
But he didn't cut it out?
No. Said there was nothing to do about it. Just leave it alone. And it was kind of a really weird brown spot. Looked like there was something in it.
Yeah, just relax and enjoy it.
Wow. Okay. I'm really grateful that you're explaining this to me tonight. Go ahead and continue.
What's wrong with the moon? The gravity on the moon is 70% that of Earth. And the reason we know that is Perry Spalter has proven that the gravitational force is independent of mass of the attracted body. There's no basis for Newton's assumption that gravitational force is due and is proportional to the quantity or density of matter. What that means is that every single figure of every single planet, everything that NASA has told us, is bogus. It's all different. Because gravity is not what we think, and we don't know what it is. The moon atmosphere is equal to 18,000 feet on Earth, and that's how the people up there live. And if you go to visit, like Howard Menger did in 1956, they have to go through a decompression for a week around the moon so that they can walk on the moon without needing oxygen. Same thing as if you climb Everest, you have to take it in 5,000-foot increments and get your body adjusted to the decompression. Same thing.
I've got this calm coming over me now, kind of a calm that I haven't felt in a long time.
Cool.
I actually feel really good right now.
Now, the daylight color of the moon is saffron yellow, not black like NASA says. It's a beautiful saffron yellow, and I just can imagine the sunsets are spectacular because they last about 3 days.
Keep going.
Now, let's talk about the sun, the temperature of the planets. The temperature of the planet is not caused by its different distance from the sun. The sun does not radiate heat. It radiates an electromagnetic force, and that force is modified by the planet's atmosphere to make the temperature. So that when we're told that Pluto is colder than an Eskimo's behind, it's not. It's the same relative temperature on as Earth is, because it's not the distance from the sun, it's how the atmosphere modifies the electromagnetic wave from
John
the
sun. My friend, hold that thought. I don't mean to cut you off, but we have to go to a break. I'm David Rubin. I'm refreshed, and this amazing experience has happened here on Coast to Coast this evening. I'm glad you were here to experience it with me. Stay tuned, because we're going to come back and talk with you right here on Coast to Coast AM.